All right, so we're talking with Sasha Mostafi. She is the author of Cemetery of Dreams, and so many of you have questions, and we'll get to all of them coming up. But hearing a little Hendrix there made me wonder real quickly, and I just want to grab Sasha here before we get to the calls. Hey, Sasha, what was music like when you were growing up? What, did they ever play Western music or American rock and roll on the radio?
Oh, no, not in Iran.
Yeah, just asking.
No, when in Iran after the revolution, no, there was no way. We would hear some classical music every once in a while, but the way we would get music was, you know, we'd get them through tapes and at the time, and we would get everything. We were just a little behind. So I remember when I came here, I was, you know, I know stuff from, you know, people who are like 10, 15 years older than me because everything got there later.
Now, what would you be listening to then, bootleg? What was your favorite, like, say, American band before you came to America? Were you getting, like, Backstreet Boys? I mean, you were a teenage girl.
No, not a Backstreet. No, we would get a Chicago.
Okay.
A little
behind.
Yeah, we were behind. We got Chicago. We listened to Michael Jackson. ABBA.
Okay.
Right. You know.
Well, I just want to read this to you. I imagine the same thing's true. A lot of banned films in Iran, right?
Right. At the time, it was actually pretty funny. We would, as I said, we would only get like an hour of Russian or Chinese movie on Fridays. But so we had a black market for movies. And there's this guy who would show up to our house. He would wear his sunglasses and he'd had a black briefcase. And he'd knock on our door and we'd let him in. And he'd come into the kitchen and open his briefcase. And it was full of movies from the U.S. And we'd get to pick. And he had a collection of maybe, oh, I don't know, 10, 20. And every time he came, he had something different. So,
what was your favorite American movie before you came here?
There are so many favorites. I don't know. Whatever I could get my hands on.
Okay,
I
went to a website. They listed the following movies as being specifically banned by the Iranian government, and then we'll get to calls. You ready? Okay, The King and I, banned.
Uh-huh.
Oliver, Saturday Night Fever. something called Cannibal Holocaust, but it sounds to me like that should be banned just on principle.
Yeah, exactly.
Scarface, Pet Sematary, Back to the Future Part 2, but not Part 1, due to a scene where Ayatollah Khomeini is burning in hell, apparently. Henry in June, Schindler's List, The Naked Gun, Showgirls. That really should be banned everywhere, too. I'm on board with the Iranian government on Showgirls. Boogie Nights, Liar Liar, South Park, Zoolander, Pinocchio, Bruce Almighty. I guess they got like an anti-Jim Carrey thing. Fahrenheit 9-1-1, Catwoman, Passion of the Christ. Why would they ban that one?
And, yeah, that's weird. You would think they'd like it.
They think they'd like the whole anti-Semitic theme in that one. Harold and Kumar Go to White Castle.
Oh, no, that's good.
Yeah, 40-Year-Old Virgin, The Da Vinci Code, Talladega Nights, The Ballad of Ricky Bobby, Borat, Meet the Spartans, and Harold and Kumar Escape from Guantanamo Bay.
Just
to make sure. They really definitely didn't like Harold and Kumar. All banned in Iran. Your questions coming up next on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett. All right. Lots of people with questions for our guest. Sasha Mostafi grew up in Iran, moved to the United States as a teenager, now the author of Cemetery of Dreams, a historical novel that deals very specifically with the failed U.S. attempt to rescue the hostages held by the Ayatollah in 1979. Otis is in Inglewood, California, on Coast to Coast. First one up for Sasha. Go ahead, Otis.
Hey, hi, Ian. How you doing?
Couldn't be better. Thank you. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'd like to say to Sasha, she's a brave woman.
Yeah, I think so, too, in a way. Yeah, we haven't said that.
She's a very brave woman to be standing up, and I hope she stands up for all the women in the Middle East who are suffering of the intense and extreme abuse of these Muslim men, okay? And I'll tell you something about this Muslim crap, okay? These men that do this to these women, they are beautiful women over there, okay? Those are Middle Eastern women, and that they need to be equal. on equal par with men, because you cannot have a democratic system over there unless this happens. So the women need to galvanize and to overthrow and change this garbage. This is a disgrace.
Well,
and
you know
I curse Muslims for that because
Let's. I want to avoid that. I'm not going to paint with a broad brush because I just don't think that's the point of this. Because there's lots of peace-loving Muslims, and we saw. For example, when that American journalist, the CBS journalist Lara Logan, was being attacked by some men, that it was Egyptian Muslim women who stood up and defended her, as did several nearby army officers who stepped in for her. So it isn't about being anti-Islam. It's about being clear about what is too far in a practice where it begins to just be cruel. And now, did you have a thought on what Otis had to say there?
I mean, I completely agree with you. Thank you, first of all, Otis, for the nice comments. But also, I do agree that, you know, we have to be careful when we talk about Muslims because, you know, not everybody's that way. The majority of people actually who are Muslims worship in the privacy of their homes, or they're just very ordinary, not normal people. These are very extreme fundamentalists, and they're making the lives of Muslims within Iran. So the green movement that you're seeing in Iran, the majority of them are Muslims. I'm a Muslim, and so you can't really put everybody in the same category.
This is not fair. David is in Charleston, South Carolina, on Coast to Coast. For Sasha Mostafi, David.
Shatori Salamati.
Merci. Shama Khubin.
Actually, I don't speak Farsi, but that's all I know from 1970.
Were you stationed there, David?
No, I was in the Air Force at Shepherd Air Force Base, Texas.
Okay, very good. You had a question for Sasha?
Yeah, but you kind of stole my thunder earlier. I just wanted to know if she feels as if that Iran basically presents a threat to their Arab neighbors, Israel, and the United States.
Well, we didn't ask about the Arab neighbors, so let's limit it to that. How about that? Would Iran be a threat to any of her Arab neighbors?
I think the only way that they can be a threat is if they try to manipulate the Shiite communities or the Shiite leader, extreme leaderships in those countries. Like, I think they've tried to, kind of push their way into Iraq a little bit. Egypt is probably going to be now an area where they're going to try and influence if they can. Afghanistan as well. So every time there's a little bit of a vacuum, they try to push their opinions that way. But that doesn't mean that they're successful. Iranians are not Arabs, so there is always this distinction that each community has. Iranians feel that they're Persian, a different race. Arabs are Arabs, so they don't necessarily listen to each other. So I don't think it's a huge threat, but it definitely does exist.
That was the core of the Iraq-Iran war, in a way, was Saddam Hussein was lining up Muslim Arabs on his side against and feeling like he was not he was fighting Persians, not fellow Arabs.
Exactly. And also, Iranians are Shiites and Iraqis are the majority are, and Iraqis, the majority are Sunnis.
Sunnis, right. So that you get into the whole kind of denominational thing. Although when I talk about that with Muslims, they insist they're not denominations, but I don't know any other way to describe that. Abby Joe is in Maryland on Coast to Coast for Sasha Mostafi, author of Cemetery of Dreams. Abby Joe?
Shalom alaikum.
Shalom.
Just wanted to add to the discussion. I was in Iran during the overthrow. And I don't know, I think maybe Sasha's too young to remember Gugush.
Oh, yes.
And there was a singer, a male singer, who sounded and looked like Tony Martin and always sang, and he had a handkerchief in his hand. I don't remember his name.
I've seen that guy. He's still around, isn't he?
Go ahead.
I saw him in a YouTube video, and somebody was making fun of him because he's kind of big and and a little heavier. He's older and heavier, but he still does the thing in his hand.
Right. And yeah. Also, I called the embassy when I was over there to tip them off that there was going to be a raid and they were going to take hostages, and they refused to believe me or take the information seriously.
Why did you know it? Why did you know it?
I picked it up on the street from my Iranian colleagues that I worked with.
What were you doing there?
I'd rather not say.
Ooh, okay. Well, very good. Yeah, good. All right. I love that. It was either for some really cool reasons or some, you know, he was involved in the trading of something that he should have been. Charles is in Berkeley, California. Wild card line, coast to coast for Sasha Mostafi. Charles?
Hi, Ian, and thanks so much for having Sasha on. This is a great interview. I really love it.
Good,
I live just a few blocks from UC Berkeley campus, been there for many, many years, and I have lots of friends who are scientists and also from the School of Journalism and so forth, and we have conversations quite a bit about this exact topic. And two things cross my mind, but first of all, before I squeeze that in, I could just imagine, since you're mentioning all these banned movies, I wonder what Lady Gaga videos in Iran. I
right.
just had to throw it in there. But okay, so anyway, two things, seriously. First of all, I find it quite credible that the Soviets might have launched a missile because in the late 70s and early 80s, when I was actually working in the National Lab System on certain projects, which I won't go into, I know for a perfectly confirmable fact that there were certain people here in the Silicon Gulch area that were developing computer chips that would have flaws, and that these chips were allowed to be smuggled into the Soviet Union because there's a lot of espionage at the time. And these chips caused a lot of troubles. They had explosions of some refineries and other things that went wrong, and they knew that we gave them these bad chips. And so I think it's completely within reason that this was a sort of a tit for tat. I mean, it certainly would fall within the realm of possibility. But the question I want to ask is, I mean, I certainly hope a revolution does occur that puts a more democratic, you know, situation there. But my question would be, is there any kind of a standing body ready to go? I mean, do you have a constitution, or not you, but I mean the people that you might know, have a constitution in place, some kind of a parliamentary structure? I mean, is there something to sort of ready to go once a revolution took place, or would there be another vacuum? Because I know that when the students took over the embassy, Ahmadinejad was actually the point man for the mullahs at the time, and sort of swept the students aside, and they you know, pushed in with this totalitarian type of government.
Okay.
My theory would be, yeah.
Let's get an answer for that. Go ahead.
Yeah, please.
Yeah, I mean, that's a very good question, and I think it's a concern that a lot of Iranians have, which is why you hear a lot of them saying, you know, let's reform this government rather than overthrow it, because, you know, the whole 1979, I think, you know, has terrified most of us about what sort of bloodshed can happen. So there isn't, unfortunately, you know, except for the reformers, the Mousavi and Kairoubis, there isn't, you know, a real plan in place. I think this movement is mostly a movement to overthrow the regime, which is a concern for a lot of people at this time. So, but I think the difference this time is that in 1979, the movement was more of an ideological movement, whereas this time I think it's a civil rights movement in the sense that people want to have their rights back, and Iranian people have matured in the last 30 years. I think, you know, in any, you know, for even an individual who goes through hardship, we mature and we learn, and I think Iranian people have learned. So I think the hope is that this time around we'll be more careful and we'll discuss things more before we take any route.
You would think with a country that's been around as long as, you know, Persia/Iran has been, and as much as Persia/Iran has contributed to global society in terms of literature and thought and some very cool architecture and stuff, you'd think you'd have that you wouldn't have acted so rashly, that there would have been more, you know, I mean, that is sort of an odd reflection that they were going to have to sort of take things slower. It's usually the newer governments that tend to fire from the hip. Let's go to Larry, who's in Newark on Coast to Coast. Larry?
Yeah, good morning. Ian, you know, before I get to my question, I wanted to point out there's an episode of program Dollhouse, which has a scenario very much like your campus pukeathon that you were describing.
Oh, really? Interesting.
Yeah, you definitely want to check it. I don't know if you're familiar with that show, but it's a great show, and you got to check out that episode.
Thank you. Okay, and your question for Sasha?
Yeah, I was disturbed by your use of the word Sharia. I'm sure you've got to know that that's a anti-Muslim code word. It's much like anti-Semites use terms like dual citizenship, and they talk about the Khazars and stuff like that, and it all means anti-Semitism. When people say Sharia, that means they're trying to get across this idea that Muslims want to impose this horrible.
That's your opinion, and that's a fair opinion, but that's just not accurate. I have friends who are Muslim who refer to it as Sharia. I have friends of mine who are married to people who are Muslim.
I've never heard a Muslim use the word Sharia ever.
Okay.
Ever.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and clear that up then with Sasha. Sasha?
I think Larry is kind of right, actually. I don't usually use the word Sharia. I think Sharia is used a little bit here in the States as a code word. You know, I was talking to somebody else the other day who kept saying, you know, they're going to come here and enforce Sharia law on everybody and take over. So I think there's a little bit of a scare tactic going off with that. I don't know that we ever referred to it that way. When I was talking about it, it was more, you know, fundamentalist Muslims. But I'm used to hearing it now. So
I will tell you that there is no part of me that's using it that way. I believe Larry's wrong, and I'll stand by my experiences here, which is with mainstream lifelong Muslims who use that word. And I think you can Google it, and what you'll find is that you'll find the Arab spelling next to it, and that it's just how it's. Now, can it be used also for that way? Sure, anything can be. You could, if you want to use it like Bill O'Reilly uses it, or Sean Hannity.
I guess that's
fine, but I'm not using it that way.
Right,
so.
Yeah, but I think that's the issue that I think probably Larry's referring to.
Well, I understand that's how some people could use it, but I don't believe that it is strictly that. And I think that it's important to point that out because I don't want to get tarred with that. And I don't know any other way to describe it, much like if we're saying kosher laws are kosher laws. But some people could use kosher and mean that they could be talking about that in a negative way. They could be trying to use that pejoratively as though kosher was implying something that's, you know, anti-Semitic. And I don't think they have to be. I think it's all in the context.
Yeah.
And I'll stand by my context on that.
Yeah, I agree with you, actually. That is true. I think it's just used badly. And so.
By some people.
By some people.
Yeah. And we haven't been. So I'm not going to.
No, you've been just great.
All right, Ed is in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. Ed,
good morning, Ian.
Hi, you're great talking show. With the. Thank you. You're talking with Sasha.
Right, Sasha. Also, good morning.
Good morning.
Now that you mentioned Sharia, I had a comment about that, and then two brief questions.
Hello.
I had seen on YouTube a disturbing videotape of actually several interviews. When there was a Muslim festival in Washington, D.C., and they asked about Sharia law. They went from person to person, and they asked what their opinion was. Should Sharia law be in America and vis-a-vis laws against gay people? And they all agreed that gays should be executed and that they agreed that Sharia should be in America. And I thought that was really weird. Mm-hmm. Anyway, one of my questions was that about the execution of two teenage gay boys, 16-year-olds, in Tehran about 5 years ago, and they punished the photographer who got the news out of Iran. And that's probably why Ahmadinejad said there was no gay people in Iran, because I agree they're executing them now.
Right.
My question is also on that same vein.
Got to be quick here, Ed. We're running out of time. Go ahead.
You hear about women who are killed because of honor killings due to Sharia and laws, and I'm wondering what the prevalence of honor killings against women for adultery or families killing women for being raped are in the Iranian society.
Well, then we'll get back to that coming up because we're just running out of time for that here. But we'll get the answer from Sasha on that. How common are honor killings in Iran? Sadly, several cases of that recently here where I live in Minnesota, and one person being put away for life for a quote-unquote honor killing. For his sister. Talk about your code words. We'll get that answer and your questions coming up next on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett. There's a little twofer from Jesse, who's running the show tonight. The Chicago, in honor of the fact that Sasha Mostafi said that she was getting music as a teenager, about 15 years behind the times. So Chicago was a big thing for her as a teenage girl. And, of course, the theme of the song, good old Robert Lamb. Actually, let me ask, bring up Sasha here real quickly before we get back to the calls on Coast to Coast. More of your comments for her coming up next on Coast to Coast. But, hey, Sasha, is rap, did rap ever catch on in Iran? Are there lots of bootleg rap albums going around?
At the time, no. Rap wasn't a big deal in Iran, but I think hip-hop has picked up now.
Okay, hip-hop, then, yeah. At least, is catching on. Mm-hmm. Very good. And any evidence of that? Do you are people playing that music while these get-togethers are going? Are they using music as a way to, or songs to kind of, you know, to galvanize people together during these rallies?
Definitely, yeah. There's been, you know, most of the YouTube videos that get posted about protests that are coming up have a lot of, you know, different types of music associated with them, just to get, you know, people more excited and wanting to go out.
Well, even as we speak right now at this exact hour, people are, according to the schedule, gathering in Iran, part of the February 20th demonstrations, which have been planned and much talked about on the net, just like it was that Sasha would have been a few years behind in her pop music experience in Iran. It will be a while yet until we hear how successful this gathering was, but we will hopefully soon through the internet. And more of your questions for Sasha coming up next on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett. All right, we'll pick it up with the people who've been waiting the longest. The book is Cemetery of Dreams, and it's a novel, but it's historically based about the time when Iran switched over from the Shah to the Ayatollah, and then life goes on after that point of the interview, point of the novel. We're talking about all the different ways in which it was difficult to grow up under these repressive laws. Danny is in Denver on Coast to Coast for Sasha Mostafi. Go ahead, Danny.
Hello, sir. Hello, Sasha.
Hi.
Two quick questions. I won't overstay my welcome. Do you lend any credence at all, Sasha, to the October Surprise Committee theory? And, Ian, you mentioned earlier that the hostage rescue was called Operation Eagle Claw. Well, what was Operation Blue Light?
Well, even under every operation, there are separate little operations underneath it, right? I mean, there's usually like one name, code name for the overarching, for the main piece, and then other different ones have. So I can't remember what the separate nights were or what the separate events were, but fair enough. I'll look that up real quickly. What do you know about that famous October surprise? Do you know what he's talking about?
I'm not sure I do.
The claim is that the fix was in. That and it's just a claim. I think it's been fairly well debunked, but that the Iranian government made a deal with the Republicans that they would not release the hostages while Jimmy Carter was president, but rather wait until after the elections, and then boom, the day that the election was over was the day that the newly elected President Reagan got to announce the hostages are coming home.
Right. Well, I don't know if that was planned that way or not, but Ayatollah Khomeini definitely had it in for Carter. I mean, he definitely wanted, it was almost like he was trying to end Carter's career because he didn't release the hostages until he was gone. So I think there is some level of truth to that, but I don't know who else might have been involved in that, or it was just Khomeini himself.
And do you remember Operation Blue Light?
No, I don't.
Okay, because I think he's right. I think there was Operation Eagle Claw, and then Blue Light was a separate night. I have to go look that up, but I seem to remember that. Let me go see what I can find on that. Deb is in Fairfield, California, on Coast to Coast for Sasha Mostafi. Deb?
Hey there, sweetie. And hello, Sasha. God bless you and everything. I'm calling for, like, I'm just thrilled to be able to speak with an actual Muslim woman. Many, many millions of years ago, I remember my parents, we were all really upset about the Iranian hostage crisis. And in 1980, I married a Saudi. And I remember at the time, I was all hot being the new wife of this Muslim guy that I wanted to go on the Hajj.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to go to Mecca. I wanted to wear the whatever I had to wear. I didn't care if I had to wear pancakes. You know, I was just going to, I really wanted to. And I remember at the time the hostages were in Iran and my stepfather was up the roof. He knew I was serious.
Okay.
And that I would have kept my mouth silent for weeks. I would have just blinked to say yes and no. I mean, my husband at the time, I remember, was panic-stricken because he knew how strong-willed I was. And his mother, you know, who prayed five times a day, was actually suggesting to him that I guess she must have hated me because she wanted him to take me. But what would have happened to me as, I guess, a supposed infidel if I would have been discovered? And I really, really wanted to know, did you ever get to go on the Hajj?
Oh, so you were going to Saudi.
I was married to a guy named Faisal. And
right. You were going to go to Saudi Arabia. Right.
I really wanted to go to Mecca.
Yeah.
Right.
No, I've never been to Hajj. I'm actually not a practicing Muslim. I'm born Muslim. I'm secular, so I'm not religious. And, in fact, there are quite a few Iranians and actually Middle Easterners in general who are secular. I just think that part just gets forgotten. So I've never been to the Hajj. I think that as far as you were concerned, if you were going to go over there, actually, I don't think anything bad would have happened to you, especially in Saudi Arabia. Americans tend to live in their it's kind of more of a closed community, and kind of keep to themselves more because for women it's a little bit harder because you probably would have been driven around rather than being able to drive yourself around. So it would have been more restrictive. It would have been exotic. It would have been different. Not necessarily tons of fun, but I don't think anything bad would have necessarily happened to you.
But you have to be a Muslim to go on the Hajj.
Oh, yes.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
So that would be very key. That and if you were found not to be a Muslim going on the Hajj, that would be trouble.
I'm actually not. I'm not sure.
I think so. I have a friend who is now officially Haji. He's been there.
Mm-hmm.
Just to go back to that other caller, Operation Evening Light was another name for Operation Eagle Claw.
Okay.
So maybe that's what the confusion was over. Abe is in Baltimore on Coast to Coast for Sasha Mostafi. Abe?
Yeah. Hi, Ian. How are you? Hi, Sasha.
Hello.
Hey.
My name. Yeah. Hi. I'm Abe. I'm an Iranian as well. I wanted to congratulate Sasha. I think she's the first Persian guest that you have on Coast to Coast. So.
Really? No. No. We've had. I can't believe that.
Well, let's give her that honorary degree.
Okay, I'll give her that title anyway. But I had 25 years of the show. I bet you that's not true. But let's just say it is for tonight.
Okay. Sasha, my question for you was actually I came out of Iran in '89 as well, and I was in fifth grade when all that thing with the American rescue operation was going on. And from what I remember, the government was saying that this was the hand of God that
right.
Right. Yeah, definitely.
Came by and,
uh-huh.
And there were some rumors about the Russian attack as well. But my question to you is the divorce rate of the Iranian women is extremely high. I mean, not Iranian women. The Iranian population is very high.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard this like the highest of all the,
Muslim
come to live. Yeah, I mean, all kind of minorities that come to America. I was wondering, what's your suggestion on how could this be resolved? Because I married an Iranian girl, and she divorced me after 6 years. She married another guy, and now she divorced him after 6 years.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, Abe, as the official second Persian to be on the air on Coast to Coast, thank you. Let me, according to your schedule. So, yeah, is the divorce rate super high, you think, among Iranian people coming to the United States or even within Iran itself?
I think it's high even within Iran itself. And I think, you know, the culture is probably going through some transitions, especially in Iran, you know, with the economy and, you know, the couples not being able to really support themselves very comfortably right now. I think it puts a lot of pressure on them. So divorce rates are pretty high, and also the inability sometimes to get to know each other enough before getting married, I think, is always a problem. Here, the situation is kind of different. You know, it's it depends, you know, on the people. And, you know, I think culturally, you know, we have situations as well, too. Sometimes, you know, Iranian girls tend to be a little materialistic, I think, and, you know, and so... Depends, you know, if they feel like, you know, they want to move on to better things, they do that. And also,
why do you think that's true? If Iranian girls tend to be more materialistic, why is that so?
I think sometimes, you know, the culture kind of wants you to, you know, be more, you know, everybody needs to be a doctor, engineer, lawyer. We got to, you know, perform, and very overly ambitious. So I think that tends to be a little bit of a cultural thing. I don't know if they're materialistic is the right word, but they tend to be
upwardly
very...
mobile.
What?
Upwardly mobile.
Upwardly mobile, yes.
As we would say. All right, let's grab, let's see, we've got a couple more people been hanging on for a while. For Sasha Mostafi, Mark is in New Mexico, first-time caller line. Mark?
Well, I want to thank Sasha and everyone there that is, and yourself on the show. And I particularly had deep interest in this since I was in the Marine Corps at the time, and we were in communications. And at the time, we were told in a lot of cases that that the Soviet Union was planning to send divisions to the northern part of Iran to take over the Gulf of Hormuz. That was a critical area that was vital to our interests at the time, and that the hostages really played a vital role in containing our interest in the area by. Moving our fleets into containing any Soviet aggression. Of course, they eventually moved over into Afghanistan. So I was just wondering if you had any information about whether or not you knew if about the Soviet Union planning to intervene into Iran after the revolution.
I think there were rumors to that effect, but I think at the end of the day, I don't think that would have been possible. I think Russia, you know, USSR has always tried to, especially at the time with communism, they were always trying to make it into Iran to get to the Persian Gulf. And they weren't quite successful there. And then they also they tried the route of Afghanistan, which they weren't very successful either. But I think USSR has always tried. I think the problem is, or the issue for them, and the good thing for Iran is that Iranians, you know, are not there are communist Iranians, but in general, Iranians are not. They're more they're more religious. Not necessarily. I don't want to say extra religious, but they tend to not. You know, go with an ideology that doesn't believe in any god like that. So I think that that would have been hard for USSR to make it. I know that it's been going on for a while that they've been trying to make it.
All right, very good. Let's get a couple more as fast as we can. John is in Tennessee on Coast to Coast for Sasha Mostafi. John?
Assalamu alaikum. How is your machitori?
So what's your city?
I was in Iran in 1969, about 2 years. Been to the Shahbaz at Isfahan, the Caspian. I had a little communication nest that was responsible for the communication of that embassy. I had about a staff of about two or three people. And I really love the Persian people. And it's a beautiful country.
Thank you.
And I hope someday that we'll have free travel back and forth that I could go back.
Yes.
That'd be nice. I think everybody would love to see them in a free situation. Pete is in Ohio on Coast to Coast for Sasha Mostafi. Go ahead, Pete.
Great show tonight, you all. Listen, I was a U.S. Navy sailor that was, at the time the rescue attempt was going around the tip of South Africa. But what I'm calling in about is, I don't know, Stasha, were you aware that the helicopters that were stored on the USS Nimitz were kept under wraps? They were never brought out during the day.
Yes, I know
they
were.
They were flown at night. Were you also aware that they were there before they tried to rescue the hostages? Somehow or the other, the firefighting system in the hangar bay got set off, covering all the helicopters in water and AFFF.
Yeah.
AFFF is very caustic, and the only way to clean it off is to put water on it. And then they tried to fly the helicopters, and they had all kinds of electrical problems.
Right.
So were you aware of that?
Yeah, I was. In fact, you know, there's a, as part of the research I did for the book, I used The Guts to Try by the on-site commander at Desert One. And he gets into a lot of detail about everything that happened. And it really reads like a thriller. It's a pretty good book. So I used that, a lot of that info for the book. Now, the book, just for anybody who's listening, I just want to let you know that the hostage rescue mission is a, you know, kind of the frame of the story. But quite a bit of the story covers the what happened after the 1979 revolution, and you know, kind of the extreme ideologies, and it was essentially showing how the revolution went wrong. So it's not just about that. So I just want to set the expectations.
Mike is in Livermore, California, on Coast to Coast. Mike.
Oh well, to lead into that extreme religionology, what do you think? With the protesters today, what they think about the 12th Imam. I mean, because Ahmadinejad and the current Ayatollah are true believers in this, and how it relates to the total situation in the Middle East.
Okay.
Yeah, the Ahmadinejad and his kind of the people surrounding him believe in the 12th Imam and believe that he's going to come back. They're part of this Hijatiya, I think is the name of it. It's kind of a sect, or not a sect necessarily, but kind of a movement where they think the end of the world is coming. So at least that's what rumor
right.
has it.
It's sort of similar. It sort of follows what we might talk about the Anointed One or the Messiah.
Right, exactly. Yeah. It's the same idea. And but, you know, the Iranian people believe in the Messiah, or what, you know, the same way that here a Christian might believe in. I mean, it's not as if they're worried about it every single day or whatever. You know, it's just something
right.
that's part of the religion. And if they are religious and they practice, they're aware of it. But it's not, you know, something that consumes them.
Well, thank you so much for this candid conversation and for all the ways in which we've explored not just Iranian culture, but then also Muslim law and the intersection with women and how it it may go in the future. Hopefully, well, hopefully even right now, there's peaceful protesting going on and we'll be hearing about it, and that more dominoes will fall and more freedom will follow in Iran. But it's a great read, and you were a terrific guest, and I hope you had fun.
I did. Thank you so much for having me on this call, and the listeners. Everybody's great. Thank you.
I just want to say, back to something that came up earlier, just so we don't stigmatize them. Turns out Cannibal Holocaust is the most banned movie in the world. Not just Iran, but like, I've never even heard of this movie, and it's like the most banned movie in the world. Country after country has banned Cannibal Holocaust, a movie that was shot in South America and supposedly used real cannibals. That's the problem. And the star of the movie is also the star of Debbie Does Dallas. That should tell you the level of the acting involved there. So thank you so much, and for being so entertaining and for being so giving. And you can link up to Sasha Mostafi by going to our webpage, coasttocoastam.com. Deus tamat, and I do too.